Good morning or good afternoon now. It's a pleasure to present to you today on this model that looks at integrating HIV into primary care settings from potentially some new perspectives that haven't been engaged before. Health HIV works in HIV prevention, care, treatment, and support, and we focus on underserved communities. We have for many years now been looking at HIV primary care long before health reform was real or certainly had the potential to be implemented. In fact, as a quick aside, we were one of the NLM grantees.
Okay.
We did a program to get primary care providers to look at the four NLM HIV websites and called it Navigate to Learn More. And actually, if you're interested, we'd be happy. We weren't one of the groups interviewed, but we'd be happy to share what we learned about PCPs using the resources in health centers, which was a good experience for them. I basically today want to just briefly look at this model, how we created it and why, the best practices that came from it, and then also the opportunities that it allows us to step from, if you will, to enhance provider knowledge and capacity to deliver HIV care. So obviously, as we all know, the landscape is changing dramatically, and not only with patient protection and affordable care, and we always, just as an aside, we always mention patient protection. Everybody talks about affordable care, but people frequently don't speak about the patient protection, and we're all in it to focus on the patient. And you know, certainly money is the reality, and affordable care is certainly critical, but it starts with patient protection. And I think all of us in public health, I think, need to speak of it in those terms, especially with everything that's going on now. And then certainly the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, which focused us on advancing in more meaningful ways in a care continuum based on a Gardner cascade, which you may be familiar with. And then obviously the biomedical prevention interventions like treatment as prevention, that we can treat the disease and that potentially we could, in some cases, at least with some generations, we might be able to have an AIDS-free generation, as you may have heard various people speak about. We also wanted to look at, obviously, all the newly insured that will be coming into primary care settings or into the one-stop shop, as you put it earlier. And just last night in the elections of the different mayors and some of the governors, there was a roundtable debate on one of the channels, and I won't get political, despite my nature of wanting to, being in D.C., but it was one of the channels that is not supporting health reform. And so they were basically shouting through the whole evening about the shortage of providers. And this model, I think tangentially, helps us, at least in primary care and in HIV, look at some ways to potentially address the workforce shortages. So I think that's an added part of it. This all was created from a project that HRSA's HIV/AIDS Bureau funded, specifically to look at non-Ryan White funded community health centers that serve racial and ethnic minority communities. And it was to enhance their capacity to ideally expand their HIV care capacity. So out of curiosity, how many of you work in a community health center by show of hands? Anyone? And how many of you work in a Ryan White funded clinic? Okay. So we needed to, and I asked that in the context of why we need to create another model, if you will. There wasn't an effective model that looked at integrating HIV into primary care. For many years, and for many very good reasons, the HIV care structure was focused on Ryan White, and the community health centers were focused on primary care that didn't include HIV because there was a structure in place. Obviously, health reform is causing that merger, if you will, and that integration. So we needed to look at a model, and in this case, we had to create one after doing an environmental assessment of what was available. We needed to provide a framework for the integration and a stepwise approach that promotes a whole site approach or a one-stop shop. So, along those lines, this was the the structure of this primary care integration project. So again, it was to increase access to comprehensive, high-quality care. And that's the other thing we always want to emphasize, is it's not enough to just get capacity built. It's not enough to just get a provider trained, but that the quality can't be sacrificed, that the providers need to be as well-versed as possible in HIV, including when they need to make a referral to a specialist. So our objectives were to evaluate existing models, create a web-based platform, build capacity to sustain the services, and you'll see a little bit about the sustainability approach in a minute, and then disseminate those findings. And we did that by aligning and developing organizational and clinical capacity, which I'll detail, and a customized training plan that looked at, in clinical training, reaching providers, nurses, case managers, and social workers, and that we say provider, we don't say physician, that the NP and the PA and the DO are just as critical, and that they all are important to care delivery, and then certainly case managers and social workers, and then also performance improvement coaching, looking at the administrators, and including the CEOs, and spend a lot of time with health center CEOs, because if they don't buy in, then it's for naught, because they will not allow the providers time to be involved in the training, they will not allow their QI teams or their support staff to be engaged, and so forth. So, the approach to this model was to merge and align two different kind of existing stages or models. One of them was on HIV clinical care, and the other was on service delivery in health centers. And then to look at progressive staging so that we can build capacity that ideally is sustained over time. So we first looked at models of HIV care and looked at a variety of sources that, as you know, there are so many models of care overall, and even within HIV. This was based on partially what the National Association of Community Health Centers had looked at, and some other entities as well. But basically, it moves from external care, meaning that testing is in place, but there's no medical management, then next to collaborative care with consultation with a mentor, to supported care, and then ideally and ultimately into comprehensive HIV care management. We then complement that by looking at the clinical stages of HIV care. And this is based on what HRSA's HIV AIDS Bureau, guidelines for clinical care, and WHO's clinical staging for HIV. So it starts with foundation, where testing, HIV testing is provided, to on-site management of those that are basically on first-line antiretroviral therapy, to stage two, on-site management and moving into second-line ARV therapy, and then stage three, complex and comprehensive care for the positive person. We then basically put those together and merge them into a stepped manner, hence the step model, which we call stage training to engage providers. And so we combine the external, in this case, to start the external care with the foundation stage, because the belief is, and it's been proven now, that you have to look at how the organization develops as well as how the provider develops, or as the clinical capacity develops, that clinical and organizational need to be married and advanced in a stepwise approach. So we first, in incorporating that model, we conduct an assessment, both of the organization's capacity and the individual's, and in this case, the clinician's capacity. So on the organizational assessment, we look at determining what stage of HIV care integration they're currently at, and then identifying their capacity needs. We then also take self-assessments to determine the individual's competencies so that we can align them with the learning proficiencies that will be needed through what we offered in an HIV training package. I will say as an aside there, in case I forget later, self-assessments were important, but providers tended to over-assess where they were, and that we frequently had to go back and typically go back a step, if you will, and we actually even created an introductory stage prior to the foundation stage for those that weren't even engaging in HIV testing. So we kept it a dynamic model and actually added more to the upfront. So then from those assessments, we customized the clinical training. So it was both group and individual training based on that assessment, and it was developed in collaboration with their leadership, with project teams, and other key stakeholders. And we created this HIV training package that was a huge binder of hundreds of proficiencies that were aligned across the STEP model. And it was both didactic and self-study learning tools and that incorporated a multidisciplinary care team. So you could say in this context as well, it's a one-stop shop for training, if you will. We then looked at the performance improvement side and looking at the CHC's infrastructure to test and treat for HIV, looking at clinic flow and protocols, things that are often forgotten because the assumption is frequently made if you train the clinicians, then HIV care is just going to expand. And of course, if that clinician leaves, so does typically the care capacity. And the other thing is if protocols aren't in place, you can't sustain that care delivery. And so there was an equal emphasis put on performance improvement and expanding capacity by collecting and utilizing HIV data. And some of you may have been at Jamie's presentation yesterday. He's our lead research and evaluator at Health HIV and spoke about the HIV data collection. And we'd be happy to share those data with you. We have some of that on our site, and we have other maps and geomaps that we'd be happy to share. These were some of the topics that were included. And then we did, of course, a monitoring and evaluation that looked at performance indicators that were significant. So clinically, we looked at percent of HIV patients with two or more visits. We looked at the percent of HIV patients getting risk counseling and the percent of patients with two or more CD4 counts taken. On the PI side, we looked at percent of patients assigned to a primary care provider, a third next available appointment being made, and rejected claims as a percent of total claims. And these were also dynamic over the course of the project. We have certainly looked at if clinical services were added or expanded, and then what were the enhanced service deliveries or QI structure that supported that integration. These were some of the results, and we have many more detailed results on this as well. 91% of the CHCs reported adding or expanding services. And that was an N of 32, and that was quite significant. I should also mention that the CHCs in this cohort served over 1 million patients, including 2,965 HIV-positive patients. So just as a context for the reach here of this national effort. So the services that were expanded or added included routine HIV screening, risk assessment, treatment education, prevention counseling, and linkage to care. And in fact, Alameda was one of the CHCs in the program. And the linkage to care made me think of that in relation to them. 91% of them reported enhancing their service delivery and their quality improvement structure, including local resource identification, protocols for linkage, enhanced data reporting, and enhanced cultural competency. One thing to just point out there, and because you may have a question on this, is the patient-centered medical home recognition that FQHC certainly either have or are looking to get recognized for specifically includes a receptive receptionist and front desk, if you will. And so the point you were making earlier about people that are being turned away or they're getting a bad vibe and all these important culturally competent activities that need to take place, including from the receptionist noting if someone's nervous when they come in, if someone isn't speaking up, if someone wants to leave, if someone is not speaking the same language, and so on and so forth. And so a tremendous amount of other areas that we would love to pursue further in looking at all these dynamics. And then the other thing to note is that it was difficult because of the short project time frame. We could only evaluate for 1 year, so we couldn't look at long-term increase in number of patients served in those CHCs. The other thing to note is all the demands on CHCs. They're being asked to implement electronic health records. They're being asked to build more health centers. They're being asked to increase their quality in treating everything, diabetes and other chronic diseases, everything that is being put on the health center at the same time that we're saying, oh, well, we want to teach you to provide HIV care now, and we need you to dedicate a year of your time to doing this and in the midst of everything else you're up against. So I think those types of results are incredibly impressive considering the CHC constraints and environment. So we learned that this model was effective at staging the CHCs. It was designed to be customized. It was appropriate. The feedback on the training was that it was relevant and comprehensive. It was a challenge to correlate how the organization developed as the clinicians developed because of all those competing demands and all those other drivers that this project wasn't really powered to determine or separate these other drivers out from it. But we do know certainly qualitatively that it had a tremendous impact in advancing the organization as well. Since then, we developed an HIV primary care training and certificate program where PCPs and HIV care providers can receive a certificate of proficiency in HIV primary care. It's based on the STEP model. It's been incredibly well received. If you're interested in it or you know providers who are, go to our website, healthhiv.org, and you'll see right on the homepage the opportunity to get information on it. And we provide CME as well within it. This is a sample of it and the steps here, 1, 2, 3, 4. The idea, too, that because of all the pressures and stressors on clinicians, that the ability to make this easy and something that can be attained and kept motivational, that it's self-paced and that it has an incentive at the end of it, really was critical in motivating them. So we're incredibly happy that this is so well received because it's meeting a need. And right now, as I mentioned earlier, and to really close on, the shortage of both PCPs and HIV specialists and hepatologists and on and on and on is going to be significant. And now that we're full throttle into enrollment, website issues aside, we have to make sure that we can do as much as we can to help advance the workforce and address these shortages. And this is one way of showing PCPs that they can treat HIV and certainly at least start testing for it. If you have any questions, that's my number and my email. Thank you.
I'm wondering whether, in looking at your results of 91% saying they had implemented HIV prevention and treatment education, I'm wondering whether you look at the quality of those in terms of A, evidence-based, and B, are they doing things like motivational interviewing, harm reduction counseling, or sort of what did those look like? Was it sort of a straight up, like, make sure you're using condoms, or was it hero sorting and positioning?
Right. No, great question. Our consultants very much tried to keep those offerings as sophisticated as possible. And so at least in the structure of it, that was what was encouraged, that it needed to go far beyond condom distribution. And we're keeping in touch through some other efforts with many of the CHCs, even though we couldn't track them after that year. We're keeping in touch in other ways, at least qualitatively, to see how it's going. And I would say from what we've seen so far, and some of our staff are here, I think the more sophisticated approaches have been taken by many of the CHCs, so we're really pleased to see that. There were also others that they couldn't be as comprehensive as they wanted to be, so it was about a 50-50 from what we can tell.
Thank you very much. How are the HIV care dedicated centers, such as Whitman-Marker Health, both embracing and or reacting to this?
Yeah, that's a great one. One, Whitman-Walker changed their name to Whitman-Walker Health in the past 2 years, and we're very close with their CEO. They're really one of the best examples in the country of how health centers have to modify. They started as an STD clinic many, many years ago before becoming an HIV-focused clinic. They are very supportive of this. They went through tremendous pains in shifting to becoming a diverse community health center and had tremendous pressure and criticism from the HIV community. And so Don Blanchard, their CEO, he goes on tour with us. We do a program called Remaining Relevant in the New Reality, and it's to speak to ASOs and CBOs and health departments about what it really will take to be relevant in the next year and everything that goes into that fiscally, organizationally, behaviorally, and so forth. And they've been our textbook example of how to do it right. So the more we can show people that it can happen, but it takes pain, it's not easy, and there is no one prescription for it, but you have to dig in. If you look ultimately at the end of it, I would say in D.C., as residents of D.C., Whitman Walker Health is now fully embraced, but there were a good 5 years where, you know, it was they were getting a reputation incorrectly for not really caring about HIV anymore, and in fact it was really that you need to treat the whole, you know, HIV disease can be treated, thankfully, in most cases with a 3-month visit and good ARV therapy, but obviously people have to look, you have to look at cholesterol, you have to look at mental health, you have to look at all the other needs of someone, their primary care needs, and they've really shown the way to do that.
Given the expansion that the Bureau of Public Health is having on developing one PhD throughout the country and the emphasis on the National HIV AIDS Project, all that, I have two forward questions. One is, what would be acceptance rate, so to speak, of the PhD when you went to doing the HIV care or thinking about doing the HIV care? And then secondly, I know you've only worked with them a year now, you're kind of on the outside, but what was your sense as we were finishing up in terms of Vivid taking that information and maybe pushing it out to all of the other PhDs, because this is one path.
Exactly. Great, great question. Well, this was funded through the HIV AIDS Bureau. And oh, okay. 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 I was going to say, it's such a good targeted question. It's based on inside knowledge. So I'll be very careful how I answer that. But let's say that this was the HIV AIDS Bureau's attempt to address community health and CHCs, and that these were non-Ryan White funded centers, and so there was a lot of, I think early on, tension that the Ryan White community is saying, and rightly so, this is, we treat HIV and you don't need to, and then the health center saying, well, they treat it and we don't need to. And then, you know, certainly reform and other drivers have made it that we have to look at what's happening. And everybody will have a role. If everybody can think of it more comprehensively, there's a place for everyone. The BIPIC was very much engaged. They also reviewed the health centers that applied. So to your first question, there was, I think, tremendous interest. We could only serve up to 30 health centers a year, and we received 60 applications the first year, 40-some the second year, and these were long applications, and they were reviewed by HAB and BIPIC, and then the selections were made for the 30 in the cohort each year. So they were kept engaged, and then the project, basically now, the objectives of it will be incorporated into a new SPINS initiative that will be coming up. And I think there'll be, from my understanding, there'll be more of a role for BIPIC in that. And I think that just like everyone else is in every setting needs to think about how to collaborate more, and we talked about it in the context of the MOUs and what that means, and actually Whitman Walker does business contracts now. MOUs to them are just, they're meaningless, and they want a business contract, and they require ASOs of the few that they will select to engage. They require, down to the number, how many patients they're going to recruit, and so forth, and they're held, they're not paid until they hit their numbers. And so likewise, I think the government agencies are thinking of different ways to engage. The AIDS strategy is encouraging that. And I think BIPIC and HAB are on their way to looking at, and I'll be curious to see how this SPINS initiative is structured, because it's important that they are both at the table equally, really, to make it as effective as possible. You know, and as a taxpayer, I'll speak from that perspective. I would hope that they would both come to the table with what's the most effective way we can do this, because, you know, our concern, back to my first point, is patient protection. And, you know, that's why we're in it. And we have to make sure right now that people aren't getting disconnected from care, and, you know, all the broader discussions about are people losing their insurance and so forth, that we have to make sure, at least in our slice of it, that we can impact it as much as possible. And so I'm optimistic that that's going to happen.
And that's a not just a point for me, if you ever get funded to continue or grow this, with the Ryan White providers who are PhDs.
We have some that started right away and then become to EAC because we encourage them to money live there. They are always willing. I mean, actually, they're always willing to help these other EAC come. And it's a struggle because I know everybody has to be encouraged, but so we gotta, you know, work smarter for collaboration and all that kind of stuff. So I was just curious to see what on the end in the project, to see what your perception is.
And I'd love to talk about that offline, too. One thing that we saw, and we handle another initiative that's private sector funded, a workforce initiative to also address the shortage through mentoring. And it's the same idea of collaboration in that if we, just like a health center has capacity to maybe say to another health center, we can help you get your HIV care capacity to scale. It's the same thing with a PCP and an HIV specialist in saying, we can help you get your HIV care to at least a first line level. And through mentoring. So one of the things I would hope to see more of is a formalized, almost mentoring from a CHC and a Ryan White funded setting. Because I think that at the core, all the providers, all the support staff that we've dealt with, they're all in it for the best reasons. And so it's an immediate fit. As soon as they're brought together, it just happens. And the potential of that to have an impact is extraordinary. Thank you.